Is that good?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a great honor to welcome back to the Brown Burr Zen Center, Seiso Paul Cooper. He's a visiting teacher, and Seiso is a Dharma transmitted priest in the Katagiri lineage of Zen, Katagiri Roshi, and the founder of the Two Rivers Zen Center in Narrowsburg,
New York.
New
yeah.
York. And also the recently founded Zen Meditation Circle.
Yeah, we've been calling it the Barry Zen Meditation Circle.
Out of the Unitarian Church. Mm. Barry, and the author of several books, several of them on Zen and psychotherapy, and another one about to be published next year.
Oh, thinking's bad rap.
Welcome, Seiso.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's an honor to be. What a beautiful environment. What a beautiful sitting. Sangha energy could feel sitting in this space. We sit in the sanctuary of the church, so it means we have to set everything up and put everything away. So we get some work practice that way. But it's a beautiful feeling here. I'd like to talk about emptiness, shunyata, or in Japanese, ku. I'm sure you all heard of emptiness and the complementary notion of praticca samuppada, or dependent co-arising. The two go hand in hand. I think sometimes dependent co-arising gets hidden in the background because there's so much emphasis on ku, emptiness. So, together, they're the foundational principles of Mahayana thought, and certainly central to Zen Buddhism, for sure. Emptiness has been described as infinite becoming, wondrous being, pregnant gourd, and being without, among some others. Some folks even translated it more recently as boundlessness, which personally I don't get, or nothingness, which I also don't get, but because it's not nothingness. Pregnant gourd, for example, kind of expresses the fullness of life. So I'll elaborate on being without a bit further on. And I'll be drawing from the Hanya Shingo, the Heart Sutra. Imagine you're familiar with it. You chant it sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Good. And I'll also be drawing from some different chapters of Ehe Dogen's Shobogenzo, The True Dharma Eye, to inform what I plan to say. I've heard emptiness described like nothingness, like the nothingness of the inside of a balloon. It is important to keep in mind that the outside of the balloon is also empty, and that the surface of the balloon is empty. What is it empty of? Independent being. I'll get into that. I'm jumping a little ahead here. And it's the inside of the balloon, it's important to keep in mind that the inside is also not nothingness. It's also emptiness, but not nothingness. It's filled. It's filled with air that supports the surface. I like the image because emptiness and dependent co-arising kind of support each other. And what's the air empty of? Same thing, of any permanent existence or independent being. Air is a result of causes and conditions of different molecules coming together, right? I'm gonna also be a little repetitive to reinforce this whole point. So any permanent or independent being any notion of abiding self, or a soul or a spirit, or a consciousness that transcends and is independent of body and mind, is a false view. The paradox here, that how Thich Nhat Hanh puts it, and I'm quoting him, "The notion of emptiness, such as Buddhism understands it, is therefore the affirmation of the existence of things and not its negation." I'd like to step back a little bit for a moment to talk about the development of this doctrine of emptiness and dependent co-arising. It was developed by Nagarjuna, the founder of the Madhyamaka philosophy, which Mahayana Buddhism came out of. And that was in the second century. And he wrote a huge treatise, and other people can also wrote treatises that were huge, called the Prajnaparamita literature. When you recite the Hanya Shingyo, that's been boiled down from over 80,000 lines of text. And we call it the Heart Sutra. We call it the heart of the Heart Sutra, even. And we, as we know it today, all Mahayana traditions regularly recite some version of the Heart Sutra, even from different cultures. I've read Tibetan versions, Southeast Asian versions, Japanese versions, Chinese versions. It's a very central to the tradition, the Mahayana tradition. Actually, over time, alternate philosophies emerged that can be attributed to the fear of nothingness, which is a misinterpretation of the emptiness doctrine, inspired by the whole notion of non-identity, and it's given rise to a need to confirm the existence of things, our own existence. We like to feel we're standing on solid ground, right? These philosophies fall typically either into an extreme of nihilism or essentialism. By nihilism, basically mean nothing's real, would be one way to put it, and we don't really exist. And by essentialism, no matter how it's broken down, there's some fundamental sense of being, posited one way or another, whether it's a soul or a spirit or some essence. The Abhidharma literature, one of the earliest Buddhist psychologies, breaks things down into elements. We could say that all of these philosophies and doctrines, and psychological theories too, emerge as manic defenses against the notion that we may not exist in the way that we think we do, or of fear. And no solidity. The Madhyamaka, and then hence the Mahayana tradition, is the exception. Here's an example. In the Sarvastivada school, it is taught that from the standpoint of noumena, things exist in the past, things exist in the present, and things exist in the future. But from the standpoint of phenomenon, they only exist in the present. So that's kind of a dualistic approach, isn't it? And we all keep hearing that Soto Zen Buddhism is not radically non-dualistic. It's dualistic because it splits reality into noumena and phenomena. And noumena refers to some kind of unknowable essence that we can't touch, taste, feel, hear, that kind of thing, see. It's not tangible to perception. Kant, Immanuel Kant, describes it as the thing in itself, as an essence. As I mentioned, it's not tangible. And one example is like an eternal notion of consciousness that leaves the body and mind after death and then travels to another body and mind. Zen does not only not subscribe to this view, but is highly critical of it. Here's a contrasting view again. I just want to create a context by giving you these other views. It's equally troubling what we could call an anti-scholastic view, that were reactions against dogmatic views that emerged in the Hinayana tradition during the 4th century. And one example is the Mahasanghika. Excuse me, I didn't actually pronounce it right. The Sanskrit word that gets tangled in my head. Mahasanghika. Anyway, they pose the problem of knowledge and emphasize the importance of purifying the mind in order to realize enlightenment. Well, this is another goal-oriented and dualistic position. My understanding of Soto is that we practice mushotoku, no gaining mind, no goal. It reminds me of two people on opposite sides of a river, and one person calls across, "Hey, come over here, come here." And the other one shouts back, "I'm already here." So we have this notion of mushotoku. You recall the story, and there's a dualistic position also. Do you recall the story of Huineng, the sixth ancestor, how he became the sixth ancestor? That he's described as a illiterate person that was not even allowed to be a monk, and he pounded rice for the cook. That's all he did. It's probably not true. I think he was probably very learned in real life, but that's a hagiography. He heard that the fifth ancestor decided that it was time to appoint a successor. And he said, whoever can write the best poem that expresses realization gets the position. So Shen Kui, who was considered the promising candidate, but he was a little shy about it, so he, when no one was looking, he wrote a poem on the wall. And the poem went something like this tradition I just described. The mind is like a mirror bright. We must work very hard to polish it clean so no dust alights. So Huineng, again, is supposedly illiterate. He can't even read it, but he hears a monk passing in the hall, sees the poem written on the wall, and he decides to read it out loud, and Huineng hears it, and he says, "Wait a minute, that's not right." So he calls the monk and asks him to write this poem. There is no mirror for dust to alight. What's the need to brush it clean? And this is where the idea comes from, that we all are Buddha nature, and we need to express it through our practice especially, and the practice off the cushion is important so that we can respond to folks in the world just the way we recited in the loving kindness meditation tonight. But these approaches all have this idea of an ontological entity, some kind of being that already exists, and that that creates a goal-oriented posture. That creates a concept of of a special mind of enlightenment that we don't have, and somehow we have to seek it. And we don't realize that that's a fantasy, and the fantasy gets in the way of being able to express our realization through our practice. As Dogen writes, practice and realization are one. There's no realization without practice, and no practice without realization. Everything is now. I noticed they have Fukan Zazenji in the chant book, and he makes it very clear right at the beginning. What's the need to run off here and there to seek enlightenment? They're already here now. This is the place. Now, we could take that literally of, you know, running around to different monasteries and different retreats and things like that, which I'm not being critical of. I think sometimes that's really important. But we can take it metaphorically also, that the mind is now. We don't have to go somewhere else in our mind if we just acknowledge and allow ourselves to be here now. At least that's how I see it. Maybe folks have different thoughts. If you do, let me know. This whole business is described experientially by Dogen in terms of suchness, or what's described in Japanese as emo, suchness. And suchness means being as it is, thusness, this here now. And I noticed his expression of suchness changed over the years, because in Fukan Zazenji, he says, if you want to be a person of suchness, practice suchness right now. And practicing suchness right now, again, is sitting with Mushotoku, no gaining mind, being present to all experience. What's happening right now? But years later, he wrote a chapter in the Shobogenzo called Suchness, Emo. And I'd like to paraphrase his playfulness about it. He says, if you want to be a person of suchness, don't worry about it. Because just wanting to be a person of suchness means you already are. So why worry? Oh, but if you're worried, that's suchness too. And I see you smiling, that's suchness too. So he goes on and elaborates that a little further, but I think you get the point. So this suchness is tied into emptiness and dependent arising. So let me read a quote from a book by Jeffrey Hopkins, who is a Tibetan scholar and a former translator for the Dalai Lama. He wrote a book in 1983 called Meditations on Emptiness, and this is how he describes it. Phenomena are empty of a certain mode of being called inherent existence, objective existence, or natural existence. This inherent existence is not a concept superimposed by a philosophical system, but refers to our ordinary sense of the way things exist, as if they concretely exist in and of themselves, covering their parts. Phenomena are the things which are empty of inherent existence, and inherent existence is that which phenomena are empty. Emptiness, or more properly, an emptiness, because just like the balloon, the surface is empty and the inside is also empty. An emptiness is a phenomenon's lack of inherent existence and emptiness is the negative or utter absence of this concrete mode of being with which we are all so familiar. Now, this inherent existence that Hopkins is describing, which all phenomena are empty of, refers to the illusion of a permanent and separate essence or self that exists separately from causes and conditions, such as an immortal soul or a consciousness that exists before and beyond our physical and mental being, a belief posited by many religious systems, as I mentioned before. In contrast to this view, described and criticized by Dogen, for example, in his article Bandoa, Wholehearted Practice of the Way, as a Seneca heresy, all existence without exception arises in a context that is subject to causes and conditions. So this becomes, emptiness becomes a standpoint of no standpoint. And from a practice point of view, I like the Chan Zen teacher, Sheng Yan, when he talks about Mukosho, or silent illumination, which was the precursor of Shikantaza that we practice, describes it as the method of no method. So see, it all makes one beautiful circle back to the cushion. A teaching of true reality leads us to the complementary notion of dependent co-arising, because true reality is a dependent co-arising generated by causes and conditions. Inasmuch as apart from dependent co-arising, there could be no reality of being to be found. I'd like to unpack this point because emptiness is characterized as the ultimate meaning of dependent co-arising, and dependent co-arising is characterized as the ultimate meaning of emptiness. Huh? Well, this is one to work with, because it doesn't mean that emptiness is a nothingness or of dependent co-arising, a nihilistic, contentless absence of being. It is reality contrasted with the realities of the world, as I mentioned, suchness, the true being of myriad beings that make up the world. It's important, I believe, to distinguish the difference between concepts and reality as a caution only as a concept, because it's the way things are, which will, if we view it as a concept and think about it too much, which I'm totally guilty of right now, with the realization of reality, which needs to be stripped of conceptual understanding. Dogen points this out in his very first writing in Fukan Zazenji when he writes, and I'm quoting, might be a slightly different version that you have, but it's the same ballpark. You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest. By original face is often used as a metaphor to describe that very first moment of any experience before the concepts and thinking filters in. But this is important. He doesn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and he goes on to tell us that describe how concepts could be useful. So for example, in his writing Entangling Vines, and I'm paraphrasing here again, he basically says, if language and thinking got us into this mess, language and thinking should be able to get us out of the mess too. So we're not dismissing thinking processes at all, but there's a time for them and an approach to them where what can develop is what he would call authentic thinking. Authentic thinking. And you know, in the eight gates, one of them is right thought or right thinking or authentic thinking. So we're not dismissing thinking in that regard. Heejin Kim describes it as revaluated thinking. That our thinking comes through our practice, through prajna wisdom, intuitive wisdom, where we can operate out of wisdom and compassion in just the way the loving kindness meditation describes we can act, rather than through fear or hate or aggression, ignorance. And also in the emptiness tradition, as you can see, this idea of fullness is really not a method of breaking everything down to nothingness. I'm going to recite a section of the Heart Sutra that makes this point that Shariputra, all dharmas are marked with emptiness. They neither arise nor cease, are neither defiled nor pure, neither increase nor decrease. Therefore, given emptiness, there's no form, no sensation, no perception, no formation, no consciousness, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no sight, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no object of mind, no realm of sight, no realm of mind consciousness. There is neither ignorance nor extinction of ignorance, neither old age nor extinction of old age and death. No suffering, no cause, no cessation, no path, no knowledge, and no attainment. Wow. You know, in the original Sanskrit, the whole passage is just one long sentence. So I was told. It's a long series of negations, as you can see, expressed as mu, which means no, and is translated as no in the Heart Sutra. There are over 20 mus, but mu is, as a noun also means a state of being without, or the state that is free. What is the state of being without? What is the subject of being without? That is the state of being without a permanent, abiding, eternal self, independent of causes and conditions. So this being without is a beautiful shorthand for the fact that we are the absolute and the relative all at once. Shiki sokuze kuku sokuze shiki. Form is nothing but emptiness. Emptiness is nothing but form. Phenomenon and emptiness in this regard are not different. Being acknowledges that we exist and describes as form or shiki. And without acknowledges that we are free of permanent, independent, separate existence beyond causes and conditions. So we could look, if you wanted to slow it down and magnify it, each of the 20 negations in the passage from the Heart Sutra can serve as a Dharma gate into realization. Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, is teaching Shariputra that she's going to teach him about Ku and Shiki. And I'll break it down a bit. In the Kyoto school Zen philosopher, Kitaro Nishida sums it up beautifully, only he, for some reason, they use the term nothingness to translate emptiness. I guess that's their thing. And as I mentioned before, it kind of doesn't make sense to me, but the whole passage makes sense. Nothingness separated from being is not true nothingness. The one separated from the many is not the true one. Equality separated from distinction is not true equality. The bottom line is that asserting nothingness automatically implies a somethingness. What is this somethingness? The Zen master Kodo Suwaki is noted for saying Zazen is good for nothing. Have you heard that expression from him? Zazen is good for nothing. Okay. Now, one interpretation of that, which has a thread through Zen going all the way back through China, is a naturalist position that says sitting is a waste of time. Remember Alan Watts? He wrote The Way of Zen, and he wrote a lot of stuff following, he's kind of paraphrasing D.T. Suzuki most of the time. He subscribed to that view, but that's because he was basically an alcoholic and didn't practice Zen at all. He just wrote about it and taught about it. But on another level, he's saying that it's only through practice that we will realize the nothing that Zazen is good for. How do we realize emptiness, would be another way of saying it. Well, practice with no gaining mind. Shusho Ichinyo, practice and realization are one. Here's an encounter dialogue that I come to sort of a conclusion here, so we have time for discussion. That describes being without. It's from Dogen's Busho, or Buddha Nature fascicle, in his Shobogenzo. And he's commenting on the fifth ancestor of Zen in China, Zen Master Daiman. And Dogen writes, the fifth patriarch says the Buddha nature is emptiness, so we call it being without. This clearly expresses that emptiness is not non-existence. To express that the Buddha nature is emptiness, we don't say it's a half a pound and we don't say it's 8 ounces. But we use the words being without. We do not call it emptiness because it is a void, and we do not call it being without because it does not exist. Because the Buddha nature is emptiness, we call it being without. So real instances of being without are the standard for expressing emptiness, and emptiness has the power to express being without. I could go on, conclude the quote, but I think the point is right there. That we have, in this term being without, we have dependent co-arising and emptiness being expressed. We're all beings, but we're without permanence, without separateness, without independence. We're all really live based on causes and conditions. And to me, the most beautiful example is that we're all separate and unique individuals that lived our own unique and separate and individual lives and lived through all the causes and conditions of our lives, and that resulted in us all being here now as one Sangha. I just love that whole idea. It's not just an idea, it's a lived experience, isn't it? When I was in Japan at a retreat at Hokyoji Temple, and it was a bunch of psychologists that we had just come from a conference on Buddhism and psychotherapy, and someone got the great idea to organize a retreat for us. So we went up to Hokyoji, and the abbot, which is fondly called Docho-san, he said when he greeted us, "I don't care who you are and where you've been. You're all here now. Let's practice together." I have more that I can say, but I get a good feeling that this would be a good place to end, and so we can have some time for discussion.